Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Welcome into another episode of the Swamp 247 podcast. My name is Jacob Rudner, alongside, as always, Swamp 247 staff writer Graham Hall. And Graham, we are getting ready to get back into spring ball. For those of you who don't know, we covered four spring football practices at the University of Florida. Florida went on spring break, as did the football team. And now they are coming back. Today is Tuesday, March 21st in the morning. And this afternoon, Graham, we will cover practice number five. So after 1 week, we resume Florida spring practices. Things might look a little bit different, though, as we get back out to the Florida football practice field. There's going to be a new face out there eventually, but not necessarily new in the sense that people don't know who he is. It's Billy Gonzalez, Florida's new wide receivers coach, hired in light of Kerry Colbert's departure for the NFL. Billy Gonzalez has spent two separate stints at the University of Florida. He is a longtime wide receivers coach. He was at Florida Atlantic for a year and then was going to be the tight ends coach at Marshall before he was hired back at the University of Florida again to coach the receiver position. Graham, you are familiar with this hire. You have covered him. You have worked around Billy Gonzalez before. Tell me about what Florida is getting in its newest wide receivers coach and just your thoughts overall on the hire. I think that's a good place for us to start today's show.
Yeah, the interesting thing before we get started is that the novelty of the spring schedule setup, where Florida had spring break in the middle of spring practice, which has not happened since I've been on the beat now, heading into my, ninth season here in Gainesville. It's something that the players are unfamiliar with, the coaching staff as well. Players were reminded to go out there and keep taking care of their bodies, keep working out, to not, you know, take any steps back before they get back in action here on Tuesday. It also gave Florida a window to make a hire in the middle of spring practice, and they continued assessing their options, and they went and got a guy in Billy Gonzalez, who, as you noted, Jacob, two stints in Gainesville previously, where I think he had a great deal of success, also had a good deal of success at Mississippi State. I mean, when he was with the Bulldogs, they had the best passing offense, broke nearly every passing record, I think, in that 2015 season when he was there. He was in Gainesville during the two national championships under Urban Meyer with Dan Mullen as well. Has coached, you know, Percy Harvin, Lewis Murphy, you name it. Helped coach guys like Van Jefferson very recently, Kadarius Toney. So he's a very familiar name around Gainesville, has developed a lot of guys. A little bit of an outlier, though. We were talking about it earlier, though. Doesn't have a ton of connections to Billy Napier and wasn't in Gainesville too long ago, so could have technically been retained by the new regime. That didn't happen, although we're seeing this now, you know, reunion of sorts, 15 months later for Billy Gonzalez as he teams up with Billy Napier. It's a pretty interesting hire in my mind. I'm interested to see how he fits in to this coaching staff, as well as his success in the current landscape. Recruiting is much different than it was 15 months ago. I think everyone can say that, whether it's the transfer portal that has just picked up at a massive rate, or how critical NIL has been in recruiting, not just recruiting, transfers and high school players, but your current roster, retention. So it's really interesting to see how Billy Gonzalez, for me, how he does in his now third stint with the Gators. It's a very interesting hire in my mind. A lot to like there, but a ton of questions also for me.
Yeah, I have some similar questions. I think that you bring up a good point. Billy Gonzalez is somebody who's developed a reputation, especially around Florida, as somebody who's a really good X's and O's coach. He understands the game at a very high level. He knows how to put wide receivers in a position to succeed in terms of route running, field positioning, defensive reading, and adjusting to what the defense is giving you. And there are a lot of former Florida wide receivers who can attest to that. They will tell you, Van Jefferson, Kadarius Toney among them, that this is a guy you want to work with. He is a very good skill developer. He understands the position of wide receiver very deeply, and he knows how to get the most out of his guys in that sense. That, of course, is a very attractive thing in a wide receiver's coach, as somebody who knows how to coach the position. There are legitimate concerns, and they have been raised by people such as ourselves, such as fans. His recruiting has been something that has been questionable in the past. People wonder about his potency on the recruiting trail. That's something we're going to have to keep an eye on as time goes on. You never know how somebody changes. I would also say this with regard to people who are concerned to a degree with regard to Billy's recruiting potency. Being around high-level recruiters, which I think Florida has several of at the moment, can change the way somebody operates. I think that environment goes a very long way in dictating exactly how good or bad coaches are at recruiting. It is no secret that recruiting was not exactly a strength under Dan Mullen when Billy Gonzalez was last at Florida. Was that a motivating factor in his lack of what a lot of fans would call, potent or effective recruiting? I would say it probably was. And so I'm curious to see exactly what Billy Gonzalez will be able to do as a recruiter now that he's in a staff that clearly has prioritized such things. My question to you, Graham, though, is, what does this hire say? What does this mean for Florida and the state of the program? Because I wonder, and I'm not saying that this was the case, but I do wonder, was Billy Gonzalez available to be hired by Florida after the coaching staff turnover? Dan Mullen is fired. Billy Napier is hired. Billy Gonzalez is a free agent, essentially, as a coach at that point. And Florida, I would assume, had the opportunity to retain him. Instead, goes and hires Kerry Colbert, who is a talented coach in his own right. We spoke very highly throughout his one season in Gainesville of Kerry Colbert. A lot of people think very highly of him. He's a talented guy. But when you choose to hire a guy like Kerry Colbert, if Billy Gonzalez was available, and then you go back and you hire Billy Gonzalez, what does that say about you? Now, I'm not suggesting that Billy Gonzalez was 100% available, but I do wonder your thoughts on that matter.
It's a very good question. I think that there's a lot of assumptions we can make about what it says about the program, about what it says about the situation Florida found itself in, what it said about the initial coaching search, what each party may have been looking for. Maybe Billy Gonzalez was looking for a little bit of a fresh start. Maybe that's what he thought he wanted after seeing a bunch of guys that he was loyal with, had worked with at many previous stops and had success with, see it all kind of fall apart. A lot of those guys did come away, I think, from that 2021 season burnt out. I think if you asked Dan Mullen and a lot of those coaches how they felt towards the end there when everything had just kind of not gone right for them over the last year. I mean, this was a team that was ranked inside the top seven, right? Not even a year and a half prior. And to see that all fall apart and come undone and the perception, I think it led a lot of people to a fresh start. I use the term outlier in a sense, but of that coaching staff there, Billy Gonzalez was really one of the only guys who took another job almost immediately. I mean, there were several other assistants on that staff who did so, but he stayed in the state and took another job. So he remained familiar with the landscape of Florida. I think that is really, really critical when you assess coaches who kind of were burnt out. Gonzalez still had energy to continue coaching and stayed in state to remain familiar with the landscape, what it took, seeing how NIL has changed, understanding what it took to, you know, navigate with a booster collective, all the things that it takes. So I think that that worked especially in his favor, while also, I think, allowing him to recharge a little bit, get some perspective, and maybe want to make that return to Gainesville once he kind of had that, I hate to say year off because he continued working, but year away from this program. And a lot has changed also of this Florida program. You know, the Hevner Football Training Center was under construction still when he was here. Like I said, NIL, transfer portal were still kind of in their infancy at the time. It I think is also, it speaks to, you asked about the, you know, state of the program. It speaks to, I think, the situation that they found themselves in, losing three assistants in that late portion where the NFL has added an extra week to the schedule. So this happens a little bit later where you can't necessarily get a great option in before spring camp. You get that extra window due to the novelty of the schedule, like I mentioned earlier, that allows you to go out there and get someone who meets the credentials. And while Florida has taken, I think, a chance on a lot of, I hate to say unproven, but younger coaching options recently, from Russ Callaway, Austin Armstrong, even going back last year to Patrick Toney, we've seen a lot of younger coaches on this coaching staff. I think that Billy Gonzalez, a lot of experience, is probably one of the more safe options that they could have got at this time of the options available from, you know, familiar with the landscape, the program, even people on this coaching staff. There's a lot of retention from a behind the scenes portion that's going to allow Gonzalez not to have to play a ton of catch up now that he's back in the building. I think that that is absolutely something, maybe an intangible, that is part of this coaching search here, is that they had to get someone who met all the criteria, could get it here and hit the ground running, because they knew where everything was and were familiar with everything. And that's something that we have to factor into, in my mind, the coaching search and assessing this hire, is all the factors involved and who could fit that criteria, Jacob.
Yeah. And look, I also think it's important to say that, you know, Billy Gonzalez's track record as a player developer, somebody who's able to, you know, see scheme and understand scheme and take it and put it into a way that's understandable for college age kids. And, you know, the way that he's able to get the most out of his athletes, as we've seen several times in recent years, all of those things are critically important. And I don't want it to seem as though I'm dismissing, or any of us are dismissing, the importance of that. I do wonder, you know, somebody like Billy Gonzalez, who has been around for quite some time, he is going into his, I mean, it's over, it's got to be like a dozen now stops in his coaching career since it started in the mid 90s. He's 51 years old. He's later on in his career at this point. He's been around for a very long time. Experience matters, but do his ways and what he's learned and how he's been successful throughout his career, how does that translate now to Billy Napier, modern football? How does the recruiting translate? Is he able to catch up and be as effective a recruiter in a staff that really requires and demands that as somebody who does come from a different style of football, just based on his career trajectory and how long he's been in the game? This is somebody who might have a different way of going about things. What is the adapting process? What is the acclimation process look like for a guy like Billy Gonzalez? We can only wait and see. We will find out. I will add this. FAU last year did not have a receiver, I believe, over 750 receiving yards. And granted, there are so many factors that go into that. It is not necessarily something you can just put on the wide receivers coach, but something to keep in mind as we proceed in Billy Gonzalez's third now stint at the University of Florida. Graham, let's talk about spring ball really quickly here before we move on and talk some basketball. Florida, again, like I said, is going into its fifth spring practice. We're just over a quarter of the way through. What has stood out to you so far just through four practices, be it an individual player, be it a vibe type thing? You know, if you're picking up on something that is impressing you just in terms of the operation, that counts. Just what maybe stands out to you, Graham, now through a quarter of the way of Billy Napier's second spring ball at the University of Florida?
Yeah, the motto I've been kind of been using is, you know, less talking, more yelling. I'll say that. I think that, and that's a good thing. I think that last year you saw a good deal of instruction, kind of wiping the slate clean, going over how to do things, erasing bad habits, a lot of instruction. And now you can really have a good base of certainty among a good group of guys, especially a lot of the young guys that were retained. I know that you have a lot of, you know, graduate transfers and unfamiliar guys in here, but the younger guys that played a good bit last year and the coaching staff that's here, there's a lot of familiarity about how to get players to respond to coaching and what you can do. And that, I think, has led to just a lot more comfortability. I've used that term a good bit as well, but the yelling is just, it's coming from a good place where Florida understands what to do. The energy is high. I don't think it speaks necessarily to the urgency so much of what Florida understands that they need to accomplish coming off a 6-7 season, attempting to improve upon that while losing a significant amount of last year's roster. It's obviously a tall task, but I think the energy that we've seen right now is coming just from a good place of comfortability. And I think that can only help Florida. Certainly several positions in terms of numbers have, you know, really interested me. I've spoke about safety a good bit. Real quick, you know, Jamarcus Weston and Billy Gonzalez have a good deal of catching up to do now that Jamarcus is in that safety room. Those numbers are extremely light there. We've talked about this. We're writing about this, but there are several positions on this roster right now, quarterback, running back, offensive line, safety, where at some point, whether it's in late April or in the summer, the Gators are going to have to add to their roster at those positions. So I think you're seeing a lot put on those younger guys and guys making moves even to new rooms, whether it's the freshmen coming in, Sharif Denson, Jakeem Jackson, a lot is on those guys right now to step up and contribute right now in that defensive backfield. And seeing Corey Raymond take over that entire unit, I think can certainly benefit that group. It's one that has stood out to me right now, knowing that there's a lot of new pieces in there and the unit could grow as we get into the offseason, Jacob.
I think that's a good point. We will be out there at Florida's spring football practices every day that they practice. That's Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Today being Tuesday, we should have this podcast up before we get to practice. So if you're listening to this, we are likely at practice as we speak, but you should keep it locked on swamp247.com for all of our spring ball coverage. We have lots of it, including practice reports, practice insider notes, and Sights and Sounds, a new addition to the content repertoire at Swamp 247, where we give you a look inside practice and basically let you see what we see. And so we are in it now with spring ball, and we hope that you tune in with the coverage there. Graham, let's transition off the gridiron into the basketball court. Florida basketball just wrapped up its first season under head coach Todd Golden, finished the campaign 16-17 overall. It marked the first sub-500 record at Florida since 2014-15, which was Billy Donovan's last season in Gainesville. But a whole lot to unpack with regard to that record. Florida had several significant injuries, be it a concussion to Alex Fudge in the middle of the season, a broken hand, of course, suffered by Colin Castleton on February 15th, which took him out of action for the team's final seven games. CJ Felder, who was a rotational piece in the team's front court, missed a month of the season due to personal matters that required him to step away from the team. So 16-17 overall, I know that preseason expectations, including those set by Todd Golden, were of that of a tournament team. That was obviously not even remotely the case. What are your takeaways from this season, Graham? I know that there are a lot of Florida fans who were dissuaded by the results in year one under Todd Golden. Is that fair? Should they be dissuaded? What were your takeaways?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
I've said time and time again that the timeline for college basketball coaches is a little bit longer than football. It's hard to get a coach to come in, instantly revamp the roster, and be a very competitive team. Does it happen? Is it happening right now? Absolutely. Look at Kansas State. Look around the SEC. Teams have done it. I don't think necessarily it's an indictment if you don't do it. I think that there are so many variables that could go wrong, that could lead a season to just kind of fall off. You know, that COVID year, John Calipari had a 9-win team with a lot of promising freshmen, guys who were headed to the NBA. So I think that when you just look at the parity of the sport, how many good coaches are in the SEC, it's only getting tougher. It doesn't really speak as an indictment to me when you miss the NCAA tournament, when you're really, really close and only the top 10% of the 350 plus teams are getting into the tournament. I don't think that you necessarily can call it a failure, an abject failure, if you don't make it. Are there questions to answer moving forward? Absolutely. I think that you look at the roster, those questions started before the season ended. And sometimes that can be a little bit insensitive to the guys playing their final games. And I do feel bad when that conversation kind of turns to that topic when teams are still fighting for their life necessarily. I do feel bad. And guys like Myron Jones and Kyle Lofton are playing their final college basketball games. And you know, Colin Castleton can only watch. When people start talking about the future, when current players are finishing up their career, there is a part of me that, you know, feels a little bit conflicted. Now that Florida's season is in the rear view, obviously the roster conversation picks up a whole lot. The transfer portal is going to be popping off here pretty soon. I don't know how else to call it any other than that. Graduate transfers can already start communicating with teams. So
everybody can communicate at this point. Okay. We're in fully open. So the portal for all players opened the day after Selection Sunday. So it's full on pandemonium now.
Yeah. This is the time where teams who are actually in the postseason, I've said this before, actually are kind of at a disadvantage when it comes to configuring their roster, retooling, rebuilding. It's tough for them to do that. Yeah, they have these, Monday through Wednesday, you know, days where they can theoretically get away and communicate. But otherwise, you're, attempting to compete, which is in turn, of course, helping your recruiting efforts. But I digress. That is something that is happening right now. You've seen already several players from Florida enter the transfer portal. Kowasi Reeves, Jason Jatobo, Niles Lane, guys who really saw, I think, their roles at Florida not really pan out the way that they wanted to. Jason Jatobo was a guy who fought his way back from 4 surgeries, has another one upcoming, still has battles to fight, has, you know, gotten several shots in the starting lineup. It could work out for him elsewhere. He may not have thought that he got the ideal shot he got at Florida, but I think that a lot of people saw that he wasn't in their best, competitive favor, I guess I should say, moving forward. And same could be said with guys like Niles Lane and Kowasi Reeves. Although I have to say those latter two, I do think it's worth monitoring where they land. I think at the right program, things could click for both of them where their development could continue to take off. I think both have promising attributes. Niles Lane, if he can become a consistent offensive weapon for a team, he can become a valuable player for a program. I think maybe one, even in the Power 6. Kowasi Reeves, the same, had very promising metrics. I think he still has a lot of a promising future ahead of him as well. A lot of potential, great size. He just continues to need to develop, and he'll, you know, he has a good chance of making it. Let me just say that. I think for Florida, they have a huge rebuild in front of them with the roster, with losing those guys. There's more attrition coming, in my mind, in the coming days. And that leaves Florida having to rebuild the majority of their roster. And how they do that for the next 2 months, we'll talk about it here more on the podcast, and we'll write about it on Swamp 247. But how they do that moving forward, I think, will have the greatest determination on Florida's competitive chances next season. I know that sounds obvious, but in this league, in college basketball, if you don't land the right roster, coaching can only go so far. And I saw a lot of promising coaching things from Florida's roster, coaching staff this season. The biggest thing for me is if they get the personnel in place to go out and apply what they know and how they do what they do to win in this league. And what I saw this season is Florida did not have the size to do that at a high rate this year. They need to go out and land some great guys in the front court to compete next year, as well as some very promising backcourt pieces, of course, losing several guards from last year's team. It's going to have to be a very, very extensive overhaul for Florida to have a chance to compete, as they know that they can.
100%. That, to go back to something that I mentioned earlier, I think that there are a lot of people who are discouraged by a sub-500 record in Todd Golden's first season. And look, I don't blame you. I don't blame you if you're upset or disappointed, if you thought that this team had the potential to be more than what it was. But I think that there are two things that can be true. I think that the preseason expectations for this team were way too high. And that was a byproduct of, you know, what Todd Golden had to say. This is a guy who said that one easy barometer for our success in year one is whether or not we make the NCAA tournament. To be perfectly honest with you, Graham, that's probably not something that should have been said. But you have to keep in mind, this is a young coach who's learning on the job, who doesn't necessarily have the experience to know that that is going to be something that could potentially be, you know, a problem for him, a comment that could bite him in the back.
Or be used against him so much, right? That's sure. Who knew that saying it, people would take it that literally.
Well, and I don't fault them for taking it literally. He did say that one thing that would define our success this season is we get to the tournament or not. That is in no uncertain terms stating we are either successful or not successful based on whether or not we reach the field of 68 and get into the NCAA tournament. It's cut and dry. They did not do that. And so, look, is that something that should have been said, considering who the team was forced to bring back? Guys like Jason Jatobo, Kawasi Reeves, Myron Jones. Florida didn't really have an opportunity to out-recruit those guys. Florida was stuck and kind of hamstrung based on the timing of their hiring. They didn't have a full staff in Gainesville until April. I know that Florida's coaches were not living in their housing situations for the first month that they lived in Gainesville. They all lived together, which made things very difficult. You're figuring out your personal life. You're worrying about moving your family. And they did not have a full staff in place. So you're doing all of those things, which have to happen. And, you know, no matter what people say, those are things that are required. They have to be able to establish themselves personally. And you're also trying to scout the transfer portal, where you're trying to bring in essentially a brand new team to reshape Florida basketball in a year. It was impossible. It was never going to happen. Now, do I think that Florida's roster as it was had the ability to win more than 16 games? I do. I think that there were several games where Florida had its flaws, be it slow starts that we saw nearly every single game, be it poor rebounding, be it poor transition defense at the beginning of the season, not necessarily closing out close games in a manner that allowed them to hold on to victories. All of those things were certainly issues and things that we'll need to keep an eye on. However, there was a lot that did not go to plan, in my opinion. Kawasi Reeves, I don't think, provided the pop that Florida was expecting him to provide. Trey Bonham is an interesting situation to me. I think that this is a guy who has the potential to be very effective for Florida. I think if he chooses to return to Florida for a second season, he has the potential to take a step forward. Did things go perfectly for Trey Bonham in his first season as a Florida Gator? I don't think so. I think that there was more that could have happened. Alex Fudge was really good at times and fell off at other times. The concussion that he suffered against Mississippi State seemed to be a challenge for him. It took until conference play really for Kyle Lofton to find his form and to play the role that I think Todd Golden foresaw for him. And then, of course, there's the injuries. Like I mentioned earlier, Fudge got hurt. Castleton got hurt. Felder missed a month due to personal circumstances. Lofton opens the season with a groin injury that is limiting for roughly 3 weeks and suffers a back injury that is challenging for him and forces him to have to play through an injury. Will Richard has a significant knee injury that holds him out of camp for a month. He comes back and tries to play on that and does so valiantly, easily Florida's best offensive player this year, but he's hurt for the first month of the season. Is there a world in which preseason expectations were just too high and Florida didn't match them, but was roughly within the pocket of what should have been expected with this team? Is that possible? I personally think so. I don't know how you feel about that, but I'm not discouraged by the first season. I think there are a lot of things that I need to see happen, especially now that Florida, like you said, has a significant roster turnover on its hands.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned a lot of those things because I think a lot gets forgotten about because we can sit here easily in mid-March and say, the loss of Colin Castleton kind of ended, Florida's chance of making it. Yeah. And I think that Florida would say it's because they kind of found themselves there. You can't really rely on a freshman to come in necessarily and instantly kill it and be, this amazing guy. Riley Kugel needed, 15 plus games to get going. Then you lose two of your, starting five players to injury at a really, really critical part in the season, at the beginning of the season, when teams are gelling and they're trying to learn how to play together on the court and you're trying to develop confidence. It's hard to do that when you're playing through injury. And then you factor in the fact that Florida was extremely proud of the fact that they constructed a difficult non-conference schedule. You and I sat there in the first week of the season, and no offense to anyone out there, and sat there and said, Florida is going to lose to FAU tonight by 10 points.
We did.
And I don't think a lot of people at the time believed that that was going to happen. And I think that now we're sitting here in mid-March and FAU is, in the Sweet 16, and people are saying, well, of course that team was going to lose to FAU. Look how they did. But you factor in, they played FAU, Oklahoma, UConn, Xavier, West Virginia, all within the first 6 weeks of the season, right, while they're trying to get gelled and, build this new roster and rely on underclassmen like Alex Fudge, who, playing a critical role at the starting four spot at just 19, Riley Kugel, his first year of basketball. And then kind of the other thing that we didn't mention too much, and this is something that I think Florida's coaching staff is one of those questions that I need to see moving forward, how they answer, is you need to obviously construct your roster with players who can play down the stretch. The injury to Colin Castleton absolutely hindered Florida's competitive chances just as much as building a roster with several players who were unable to contribute. No disrespect to Niles Lane, even Trey Bonham, Alex Schmizek, played valiantly, Jason Jatobo, Denzel Aberdeen, but that's five guys right there that Florida was unable to significantly count on to help them win games down the stretch in SEC play. When a majority of your roster you are not trusting to get you through even critical stretches of games when guys need a rest and when your entire starting roster is playing 30 minutes a night, when you can't stagger them, you do kind of can increase their chances of injury. Think about right. that. If Colin Castleton played less minutes, if they relied on Colin Castleton less, that is absolutely correlated with a decreased chance of him getting injured. The less he's on the court, the less chance. It's just so for all that being said, they have to go out there and have a roster of 10, 11 guys who you could be comfortable playing at anywhere from 10 to 30 minutes a night. Florida did not have that this season. They didn't even get a 13th guy in camp until, late July, the first week of August, after offseason workouts. That can't happen this year. They have to have a stable base in place by the end of May, in my mind. Guys fully on campus in the offseason, working together, and 10 to 11 guys that they feel comfortable contributing. That is a tall task. And it's something that this coaching staff is going to have to go out there and nail, in my mind, over the next 2 months.
Look, and here's the other thing. I think that Florida needs to get to a point where it is able to, like, judging this team is difficult because I really, truly don't feel as though Florida had its guys, based on its coaching staff, to be able to really demonstrate what it can do. We saw flashes of very good play, I thought, throughout the season. We saw flashes of very poor play throughout the season. But I guess my point is, I am waiting to see what Florida looks like when it has its desired personnel in place, when it has a roster full of guys who it recruited, whether they're transfers or true freshmen or whatever the case may be, or guys it chooses to retain. Because here's the thing. The guys who were required to stay on the roster in year one, whoever they were, former Mike White players who remain Gators under Todd Golden. In the first season, you don't know what influenced that. You don't know what caused those players to have to stay. We do know that they don't have to be there for year two. Florida can now make its moves to align its roster towards its beliefs and how it thinks it needs to manage a basketball game and a basketball team and roster construction. There is no excuse at this point. And so I am eager one way or another to find out exactly what Todd Golden can bring to the table in his second season with a roster he's recruited, with a roster he's evaluated, and what exactly that looks like. It's an interesting situation to me. I don't feel too poorly about where Florida basketball is headed. I will also say this. They are in it with a ton of transfer options right now, talking to well over 50 guys. There are several players who are emerging as more focused options. We've had those covered over at swamp247.com. We would encourage you to check that stuff out for more information on Florida's basketball recruiting as we get deeper into the offseason. Graham, last section here of the podcast before we call it a day. Florida baseball is off to one hell of a start to its season. They are 18-4 through 22 games, third-ranked team in the nation. I would argue that they have the country's most potent lineup at the moment. Has to be among the best starting rotation in the country. From an expectation standpoint, for somebody who's been here for a decade now, I believe, really understands the fan base and the market, what are the expectations you think this year, Graham, with Florida baseball? And I'll wrap up with some thoughts on the roster, but just what does this team need to do to keep the fans happy in year 16 under Kevin O'Sullivan?
Expectations are really high here. You have to be exemplary to be notable here in Gainesville. I think that may sound a little bit unfair, but you look at the caliber of player who has come here through here recently. You look at having one of the best stadiums in college baseball, if not the best, to compete. You know, there's a ton of parity in the sport. You know this. To be able to win it all takes even a good deal of luck, and the SEC is only going to get tougher next year. You have to be great. This is a team that I think there are a lot of fans still in the fan base maybe holding their breath to make sure that this is real, that this could be a, you know, a Tennessee-type dominant team from last year. You know, you mentioned four losses. Teams don't get off to 31-1 starts. That doesn't happen very often. To be 18-4 is incredible. Right now, it's Florida and LSU right now at the top of the SEC. In my mind, I think you got to give Florida a little bit of a notch above the Tigers right now, even though LSU holds down that number one spot. But expectations are enormous here. A lot of disappointment from last year, the way things went down. Sometimes the rain just kills your season. If it doesn't happen last year, we're having a different conversation about how the season in Gainesville ended last year. If Florida can keep this up, avoid injury, if they can get some guys back, I know that guys like Coppola had a little bit of a setback, but if they can get even better and more in a groove, this could be an extremely special team, but it's a long season. They're going to have to keep this up, an incredibly promising start. And I think that if they keep it up, you'll start to see expectations really align with reality, where the fan base really, really gets behind how good this team is.
Yeah. And you know, if you follow along with Florida baseball and you're on the Swamp 247 message board, you've probably engaged in the conversation a little bit, and you've seen me say this. I think that this Florida team has everything it takes to be an Omaha caliber team. And now, granted, getting to Omaha is an unbelievably difficult thing. It requires a lot of things to go perfectly right for you. Healthy players at the right time of the year. You have to be hot at the right time of the year. You have to win a single weekend series in a super regional to advance to Omaha. So you could have a phenomenal season and play one three-game set and it doesn't go your way and you're done. Tournament play can be that way. That's how it works. It's why it's so exciting. So I'm not going to stand here or sit here and try and tell people, you know, Florida should be in the national championship or Florida will reach Omaha. There's no way to know. Do I know Florida needs to advance beyond the first round of the NCAA tournament this year? Absolutely. They're currently tied for the longest streak under Kevin O'Sullivan without a super regional appearance. That's something that's got to end this year. And especially with the roster that Florida has, you go up and down the group, extremely talented. The starting lineup, I think, is phenomenal. You have guys 1 through 9 and off the bench who could start for any team in the country. And they're all playing together and producing at a very high clip. You have guys like Jack Caglione, who has become a phenom, a national name if you're a college baseball fan. He has 13 home runs. He's also been pitching great for the Gators as a left-handed pitching prospect, throwing 99 from the left side on Sundays. They have Hurston Waldrop, who is a top consensus projected top 15 pick in this upcoming MLB draft, has one of the single best pitches, his splitter, among all draft prospects this year. Brandon Sproat, Florida's Friday night starter, is rolling through nine complete innings with just one hit allowed, nearly a perfect game, just four batters off of the minimum against Alabama in Florida's conference opener. The concern, though, Graham, is this bullpen. Florida has talented pitchers who are capable of pitching in relief. Have they been as good as expected? No, not even close, really. There have been struggles and hiccups along the way. Kevin O'Sullivan has not shied from that. He has said pretty explicitly that the bullpen has been an unforeseen problem for them, and they feel as though they are more talented than that group has been. Now, granted, we are 22 games in. Conference play is 3 games old. Like you said, there is a lot of time, a lot of things to learn before we really have a complete picture of what exactly this Florida team is. But I will say this, I am encouraged by the start that this team is off to. They're going to face Florida State on Tuesday, March 21st, probably shortly after this podcast hits the airwaves. And you might even be listening to it after Florida plays Florida State. And then a weekend series at defending national champion Ole Miss. So this will be a good week to kind of exactly test the mettle of this Florida team and see exactly how good they are. Graham, any final thoughts for this podcast where we have now covered all three Florida basketball, baseball, and football? Any wrapping up thoughts here for us?
I think we just about covered it. A lot of great coverage at Swamp247. If you're interested, make sure you check it out. Subscribe, follow us, leave a comment. We'll respond. We'll see it. And we'll be back pretty soon here. A lot of great coverage. Follow Blake Alderman for recruiting coverage. Follow at Jacob Brunner on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at @GrahamHall_. And we'll be back pretty soon with more football, basketball, baseball coverage. It's about to get very, very busy. So make sure you stay tuned in.
Yeah, you're stealing my lines. It has been busy. We've got lots going on over at swamp247.com. Like Graham said, recruiting is in full swing. Blake Alderman does a great job of covering that. And we would encourage you to check it out. I will say one thing that Graham did not, and that is please check us out on the Swamp247 message board. We are constantly sharing information over there that doesn't necessarily make its way into stories. And we would love for you to join the conversation with the largest and most active message board community in the Florida market. You can do so by subscribing right over there, swamp247.com, daily Florida coverage of Florida basketball, baseball, and of course, football, which is in full spring with spring ball right now. Lots and lots of football content going up over at swamp247.com. And lastly, if you're listening to us on YouTube, please hit that subscribe button. We definitely appreciate it. Like Graham said, leave a comment. We do read them and we appreciate them. If you're listening to us on an audio only platform, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc., we appreciate you. And that is that's pretty much it. For this episode of the Swamp247 podcast, my name is Jacob Rudner along with Graham Hall, and we will see you next time.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.